Julia Miller from EPA State Climate and Energy Program. Thank you for joining us for today's webinar on estimating the health impacts of climate change and clean energy programs. For the purposes of today's webinar, when we talk about climate change programs, we mean the clean energy programs that reduce greenhouse gas emissions, which includes energy efficiency, renewable energy, and combined heat and power. These programs reduce criteria pollutants, which in turn directly enhance air quality, improve public health, and help people avoid expensive illnesses and sick days that can affect their spending, productivity, and quality of life. So on the webinar today, we're going to take a look at three different tools that EPA offers to help state and local governments calculate the health impact and the related economic value of programs that reduce these criteria air pollutants, such as energy efficiency, renewables, and clean transportation programs. Generally today, the order of the presentations will go from the most basic tool to the most sophisticated tool. We're going to start with Julie Wang Hawkins from EPA's Office of Transportation and Air Quality. She's going to give us an overview of the diesel emissions quantifier tool. Then we're going to switch to Denise Mulholland. She's with EPA's State Climate and Energy Program. She's going to go over the COBRA tool, the Co-Benefits Risk Assessment Screening Model. Finally, we'll hear from David Risley from EPA's Clean Air Markets Division. He's going to give an overview of the Environmental Benefits Mapping and Analysis Program, also known as BENMAP. So I'd like to thank all the presenters today, Julie, Denise, and David, for taking the time to be with us. You'll see listed on the GoToWebinar toolbar and at the bottom of the agenda, which should be up on the screen right now, there's a web link that you can follow to find all the presentations for the webinar. There are also links to all of the tools. And there will be a recording and a transcript of this webinar, and we will post those to this website in a couple of weeks. Upcoming webinars that we're going to be doing will be on topics such as key climate change measurements, which we also refer to as climate indicators, including greenhouse gas emissions, heat waves, drought, precipitation, and sea level rise. We'll send out a save the date for that in the coming weeks. And we're also planning to do a series of webinars on climate adaptation issues starting around the beginning of 2013. So as always, we're looking for new topics for webinars related to energy, air quality, and climate change that are of interest to state and local governments. So if you have any ideas, please submit suggestions. There's going to be a feedback form at the end of the webinar, so you can submit suggestions there. Or if you can't stay till the end of the webinar, you can always type in suggestions. You can use the chat box or the question log. So now I'm going to hand the webinar over to our facilitator, Catherine Morris from the Keystone Center. She's going to cover some of the logistics and get us started.
Thanks, Julia. First, we're going to launch a poll to get a better indication of the type of listeners we have, the attendees. So you should see a poll on your screen right now with a question about what best describes your agency or organization. We'd ask you in the next couple of seconds to please click on your response on the screen and hit submit once you've hit that response. Just our panelists, you will not be able to respond. This is only for our attendees. But if you would, we're going to launch a number of questions like this throughout the webinar, and I'll bring your attention to it as it happens. And it's going to help us, again, gather some information about your experience with these tools or your knowledge of them and different ways you might find them helpful in applying them to your day-to-day work. So I'll give you the chance to respond, and then you'll see, as we will hear, the answers shown on your screen. So you can see in this case, we have quite a few people that are in the environment arena, 8% in transportation, 15% in energy, and 18% that would describe them as other category. So that is one of the logistics items that I did want to cover is how this polling is going to work throughout the webinar. And before I introduce you to our speakers in a little bit more detail, I also wanted to explain to you what other tools you have at your disposal in order to interact with our speakers during the webinar. We have over 100 people on the webinar today, so you'll have obviously noticed that your line is muted. You aren't able to talk, but we do want you to be able to ask questions and submit comments throughout the webinar. To do that, you're going to want to use the question and answer section of the control panel on your screen. If you simply type in a question, and we've gotten a few already about some of the mechanics, but if you type in a question there, it will be sent to the organizers, and that includes me as well as our speakers. And we'll have the chance to look them over and sort through them a bit and try to answer as many of those questions as we can get to during the webinar. We're going to pause after each of the speakers so that we can address some clarifying questions. So we'll only spend about 5 minutes doing that. And then we've reserved about 20 minutes at the end of all of the speakers' time so that we can open it up for more involved questions and some interaction between our speakers. So you'll see, again, we're going to launch a poll throughout, a couple of different questions throughout the webinar after each of our speakers. And we're also going to ask you some questions at the end of the webinar. When you are about to sign off, you'll see some questions pop up on your screen. And please take a few minutes, if you would, just to complete those. It really helps us to plan for future webinars and to be able to customize them to your responses. I think that's about it. One other thing I guess I should show you is that your control bar is a floating control bar. You can move it around on your screen, but you can also minimize it so it doesn't obstruct your view of the screen. So you do that by clicking on the red arrow on the tab of the left side of your control panel, and that will get it out of the way for you, and then you just click it again to bring it back up so that you can enter your questions. So with that, let me now introduce our first speaker and tell you a little bit more about her. Julie Wang Hawkins has worked with EPA's Office of Air since 2008, and specifically she's been working on retrofit technology verification for heavy-duty diesel vehicles and aerodynamic devices for tractor trailers. So she has a lot of experience on the types of technologies that she's going to be talking about in when she's describing this tool. She's been actively managing the diesel emission quantifier for the last 2 years and has been spending quite a bit of time making sure that it's usable for you. So the first thing she's going to do is just give you an overview of that tool and then walk you through an example of it. With that, we'll turn over the presentation controls to Julie so she can begin her presentation.
Okay, thank you, Catherine. Just giving it a second for the presentation to switch over. Okay. Once again, if you have
any... excuse me, Julie. I see we have a new poll that's been launched, and this is, again, just a preliminary question to get some feedback from you on which of these tools that we're going to be talking about today that you are aware of before we actually explain them all to you. So if you quickly answer this question, and then we'll get on to Julie's presentation.
Okay, thank you, Catherine. Once again, I will be going through this tool in about 10, 15 minutes. And if you do have any questions, please type them into the chat bar. And we will try to address as many of the clarifying questions as we can on the call, as well as a few of the discussion questions at the end of the webinar. However, if we don't get to your question, we will be following up afterwards. The Diesel Emissions Quantifier does publish a frequently asked questions document. So feel free to check there, and all these links and information will be presented at the end of my presentation. So to begin, this is called the Diesel Emissions Quantifier, or the DEC for short, the National Clean Diesel Campaign in the Office of Air for the Environmental Protection Agency. So here is my overview. I will start with what is the DEC, a general definition, the overall structure, the types of inputs you will need to do a calculation, an example calculation, and the result and interpretation. So what is the DEC? So the DEC is a web-based interactive tool that evaluates retrofit projects for medium and heavy-duty diesel engines by estimating pollutant emission reductions, cost effectiveness, and health benefits. Mostly this tool is used by fleet owners, grantees, nonprofits, as well as state and local governments, which is you guys. So types of projects for DEC calculations. This tool was originally designed back in 2005 for the Diesel Emissions Reduction Act, otherwise known as DERA, which is a cooperative grant competition for diesel retrofit projects. Some of you might be familiar with it through either the national competition or the state program. So the types of projects that this tool was designed for include exhaust after-treatment technologies such as catalysts, filters, SCR systems, as well as other devices, engine repowers and replacements, fuel upgrades such as biodiesel and natural gas, and idle reduction technologies such as APUs, auxiliary power units, heaters, and shore power. Now, I will mention that when this tool was first designed, it was primarily geared towards exhaust after treatment technologies. The other three were added on later on, so I would say it is probably most powerful for that very first one. So what a DEC is not. I think it's pretty obvious, but the DEC does not currently provide estimates for light heavy duty or non-heavy duty engines, or non-diesel engines or vehicles, or any that are pre-1980, or ocean-going vessels for ports. The DEC may also not be used for state implementation plans and conformity. We've heard stories that people use the DEC to estimate for SIPs, but primarily, I believe for SIPs, you are instructed to use MOVES. So consult your regional office regarding the SIP and conformity guidance. So now we're going to go into the DEC structure. There are two types of calculations. The first is on-highway and non-road. This category includes all the medium and heavy-duty diesel engines and equipment, as well as some stationary and rail. So this is basically everything from school buses to transit buses to construction equipment to stationary generators, as well as three different kinds of trains. The second one is for marine vessels, which only includes C1 and C2 category vessels, which are between 700 to 11,000 horsepower and less than 30 liters in displacement. So the only one that's been excluded are ocean-going vessels, and we are currently not able to include that right now because they tend to be their operating cycles tend to be very inclusive and. And I think further research needs to be done here before we can quantify these. So these are the types of calculations. And so the next step, once you pick your calculation, you get to define your fleet and your vehicle groups. So this is just terminology, so you don't have to memorize this, but just kind of have an understanding that a fleet is your collection of vehicles or engines and equipment. So, for instance, your state or your local area might have 100 school buses and 200 bulldozers, and that would be your fleet. A vehicle or engine group, on the other hand, is a subset of your fleet, and they should be similar in terms of vehicle type and age. For instance, model year 2007 school buses. So ideally, a fleet will have many vehicle groups. So once you are able to define your fleet and your vehicle groups, you get to add your technology. So the technology entry, you can apply one or more technology options to your group. These options include filters, catalysts, alternative fuels, and more. And the thing to keep in mind here is that not all technologies can be put onto one vehicle at once. A classic example of that is if you're already putting on one filter, it's unlikely that you can put on a second filter. There's usually not enough space. So the tool will tell you if you cannot or if you are not able to put on a second technology. Once you add your technology, you can quantify your results, and you can view the results and download them in spreadsheet form. So this final part of the DEXT calculation, this was added maybe like 2 years ago. It was one of the more recent additions to this tool. It is the monetary health benefits calculation based on the tonnage of PM reduced. As of right now, we only have health benefits for PM. We are working to get health benefits for NOx and hydrocarbons. But for the time being, the DEXT can only calculate health benefits for PM, which is particulate matter 2.5. So after you have fully quantified the emission reductions, you can choose to quantify health benefits for up to 5 counties in the United States. They don't have to be in the same state or in the same state as your fleet, because given the nature of these on-highway vehicles and even the rail and marine, a lot of times these engines and vehicles travel across state lines, and the benefits can usually be found across several states. So I'm just going to briefly go over some of the inputs that you need to have for this type of calculation. This looks like a lot, but it's actually pretty simple once you get to it. So the state of your project, number of vehicles, type of fleet, your class or equipment, model year, the year of the retrofit installation, your current fuel type, your fuel volume. For on-highway vehicles, we ask for the annual miles per vehicle and the idling hours. For non-road engines, we ask for the horsepower and annual usage rate. And then we ask for the technology details, such as how many idling hours are being reduced, as well as a new model year if you are replacing an existing vehicle or engine. And again, this doesn't have to be perfect. It's very difficult, actually, to get the exact data for this many variables to do a calculation. Most of the time, if you don't have all this information, we ask that you get as many as you can, and then for the rest of it, use an estimate or a default value. We don't encourage that, obviously, but for the sake of estimates, sometimes you using a default value can help you at least ballpark your emissions. And obviously, the more accurate your input, the more accurate your calculation will be. So here I have an example for a school bus idle reduction project. So here I'm going to present a series of screenshots. This is basically the home page of the diesel emissions quantifier, sort of zoomed in to kind of show you what we have available. So here, the link is at the bottom in huge letters. Here we have a box to the upper right-hand side with a frequently asked questions document, a default values, a user's guide, and a health benefits methodology. My recommendation is that unless you really want to learn more about the tool itself, including the back-end modeling, the frequently asked questions is probably enough to answer most of your questions, give you an idea of what the DEXT can and cannot do without getting you too much into the modeling and the back-end equations. So we have 3 tabs. This will likely be updated with a slightly different format, but the same tabs will apply. We have the overview, use the quantifier, and my account. So we're going to start with the use the quantifier. So first, like I was talking about before, the structure of the deck, the first thing you have to do is you have to define your fleet. So here I've typed in a school bus for the fleet name. You can name your fleet anything you want. Make it something that is descriptive of your calculation. The fleet type is on highway or non-road. And the state, I've chosen Maryland. And here we have a question. Do you want to estimate the total cost effectiveness of the project? Yes or no. If you pick no, this area that you see at the bottom will disappear. But if you pick yes, this automatically appears, and you can populate the cost, basically. of your project. Usually this part is used for grantees, grant competitions, or grant proposals. For instance, if a EPA is giving out $100,000 for a particular project, and DOE is giving out $20,000, and then you can fill in these other ones if you have private matching or your own matching, or if your state is putting in more money, as well as other money. What the DEQ will do is add up all these numbers and calculate a final cost effectiveness value that I will get to once we get through this calculation. So after you enter in this information, you can click Save Fleet. The second step, as you can see before, so here's a bar here at the very top that kind of shows you where you are in your calculation. A fleet entry, vehicle group entry, technology, quantify results, and health benefits. So this is basically the structure that I presented earlier. So now that we are at the second step, we get to add a vehicle group. So this is what your vehicle group will look like. I gave it a group name. I call the school buses test. I have 10 school buses. I've chosen on highway. The target fleet is school bus, and the class equipment is also school bus. I've chosen default model year of the year 2000 and the year of retrofit action, which is the year that I'm actually going to do something to this bus, will be 2012. Here is a little blurb about our modeling, which is the moves versus the mobile 6.2 emission factors. The quick background on this is that the diesel emissions quantifier is based on mobile 6.2 up until until model year 2010. And then from 2011 and forward, we switched to the MOVES model, which is when the MOVES model became the official EPA standard. We chose to keep it in this format because it's easier for people who are doing back calculations to see the old numbers compared against the old numbers. But if you want the better, supposedly MOVES is a more accurate model than mobile, if you want the better MOVES numbers, we recommend that you select 2011 or later. In this case, we're selecting 2012. The type of fuel here is the regular ULSD with 15 ppm sulfur, which is the in-use fuel for all on-highway vehicles. Down here, we have some links for you. And this is a link that will allow you to automatically populate your calculation with default values if you don't have this data down here available. Once again, we recommend that you use exact numbers as much as you can. If these numbers don't automatically populate, here is a link to a document with all the default values laid out, and you can consult that for looking up other default values. These question marks, unfortunately, I can't click on them, but they are basically help text to kind of guide you along as you are going through your calculation. They will give you answers to some general questions that you may have regarding this tool. And all of them have a little bit different language to them depending on which part of the screen they are located. So once I've populated all of my information, the fuel volume, the vehicle miles, and the idling hours, I can save my group. So I'm just going to notice a color scheme here. The brown is for the vehicle, and the green is for the technology, so just to kind of make it visually pleasing. So here you can see that your vehicle group has been saved. If you need to edit or go back at any time, you can click Edit Group to modify what you've already entered. So here I can add a new technology. So this screen will populate, and you will be able to choose technology type. Here I've chosen idling control strategies, and my technology is a direct fire heater. The number of hours of idle hours that are reduced per year, I've chosen 200, and I'm going to apply it to all 10 of the school buses. This you can also change this number. So, for instance, if I was only going to have 5 heaters for 5 out of the 10 school buses, I can change this number to 5, and then I can add the other 5 to something else. That is another option when you have a lot of fleets in one vehicle group. And then here we have the percent reduction by pollutant for heaters for this number of idle hours reduced. And these numbers, by the way, you can change. You can click on this and you can change this 98, for instance, to 90 if you wanted to. And I would only recommend that you modify these values yourself if you know for sure that your technology is going to give you certain benefits. If you don't know for sure, then you can just use whatever the deck already has here. And then down here, you can put in the installation cost and the unit cost. This is optional, but you can put these numbers in here also to help you calculate the cost effectiveness. So once all this is entered, I can click Save Technology. So now I have my fleet as well as my technology, and you can add more technologies to your vehicle group if you would like. You can add more vehicle groups to this calculation as well. But for now, I have my fleet and I have my vehicle groups. So I'm going to quantify emissions. So this is a screen that you will see. This is the summary emissions results. This is the first screen that you will see once the deck has finished calculating. It looks like a lot of numbers, but it's actually quite straightforward. We have the calculations divided out into annual, daily, lifetime, and cost effectiveness and remaining life. So the annual is really what the deck really gives you. The daily and the lifetime are based off of the annual. So for the annual, for instance, we have NOx, PM2.5, hydrocarbons, carbon monoxide, carbon dioxide, and the diesel equivalent. So this is your five pollutants, and then this is just your how much fuel you would save. And this diesel equivalent is based on the CO2 emission factor. On this side, we have baseline. So the diesel emissions quantifier calculates the baseline emissions for your fleet, and then the percent reduced, and then the amount reduced. So you can kind of just eyeball, like, this is what you start out with. This is how much is reduced. This is the percent that was reduced, and this is how much is actually reduced. We have that in annual, daily, lifetime. And at the bottom, we have some cost effectiveness calculations. There's two different types of cost effectiveness. Unfortunately, I don't have time to get into this particular webinar. The frequently asked questions document covers this in detail. Feel free to refer to that, but there are two different ways to calculate cost effectiveness. This total cost effectiveness is the one that is used by the numbers that you entered at the very, very beginning, and the capital cost effectiveness are used with the installation cost and the unit cost for each individual technology. So that's the biggest difference. And the remaining life is calculated based off of an algorithm that we use depending on which kind of vehicle you have. So for school buses that were produced in the year 2000, in 2012, they have 17 more years left. And this 17 is used to calculate the lifetime emissions. So most of the time, you probably don't want to stare at your computer screen for too long, so we give you the option to download your results. We have two reports that you can download. The first one is called the detailed report, and this one contains all of your inputs and all of your outputs. So the importance of this report is that if you ever want to redo your calculation, this one has all of your inputs, so you will know exactly what you used, which numbers, and where you put them. So this is a very valuable report for replicating any future calculation. The summary report, most of our grantees are familiar with this one because we ask for this one with their grant proposals. So this one, if you are a grantee, you might want to consider getting this one because it is a summary. It has only some of your inputs but all of the outputs. So, and both of these reports are available for both Microsoft Excel as well as comma-separated values, whichever one you prefer. Sometimes I advise people to just download both versions because once you download the Excel, if you wish to convert it to CSV, it doesn't always work. So downloading all the reports when you're able is probably a good idea.
Hey, Julie, I know we're a couple minutes behind schedule, so
it's pretty much
wrap
yeah.
up. Okay, great.
Yep. Thanks. Okay, so to wrap up, the very last thing, just going through this really quickly, the health benefits, like I was saying before, you get to choose 5 counties, and they don't all have to be in the same state. So for a project in Maryland, I chose 3 counties in Maryland, 1 in D.C., and 1 in Arlington, Virginia. And the percentages of the the percentages refer to how much benefit each of these counties will give. So for these school buses, I choose these buses will be in Baltimore 20% of the time. So I gave Baltimore 20, and then 15, 10, 25, and 30. All of this has to add up to 100. And then you can click on Calculate Benefits. And you will get reprint the PM 2.5 reduction, and then the benefits in dollar amounts. And you can also download this at the very bottom. And the very last thing, I won't have time to go through this, but this is very easy. You can save your run by creating a user account. All you have to do is click on the upper or right-hand side. There's a place called Login or Create an Account. And all you will need is your email, your name. You don't even have to keep your organization or your phone, but a name and an email is basically all you need. So with that, that is the end of my presentation. Do try the deck out for yourself, and if you have any questions, the frequently asked questions document is available as well.
Thanks, Julie. We have a number of clarifying questions that we wanted to see if we could answer before we move to our next speaker. One was from someone in Kentucky who said that they're trying to estimate the savings from the use of hybrid school buses, the conversion to hybrid school buses, but they don't have a full calendar year of data on those buses, in large part because they're coming into the fleet at different time frames. So do you have suggestions about how they could adapt the tool to accommodate that problem with their data, or is there a different tool that they should be using?
That's actually a more complicated question than what I can answer on the call. I would advise this individual, and if you have similar questions when your data is not complete or your data doesn't quite fit in with what we're asking for, go to our main website, the very first link that you see. There's a link called Contact Us, and you will be able to send us a specific email, and somebody can walk you through your calculation with you.
Okay, thanks. That helps. And another one, is there an air quality modeling tool or built into DEQ?
I'm not 100% sure. That's kind of the background of the DEQ. So the DEQ uses MOVES and non-road. So those are both models. And we use the numbers from those two tools to serve as the back end. So as we go through each calculation, for all the on-highway vehicles, you're essentially using the MOVES numbers. And for all the non-road, you're using the non-road model numbers.
Okay, in one of your slides early on, you mentioned that this is not a tool that you should be using for calculating emissions for the state implementation plans or conformity determinations. Can you talk a little bit more about that and why it's not appropriate for that use?
Unfortunately, I don't have a lot of knowledge on the state implementation plans and conformity. What I do know is that there is very specific guidance on which tool should be used. And this tool, unfortunately, is not one of them because it is not detailed enough. All the estimates that we do here is not really for planning purposes, but more for smaller, like, projects on a much, much smaller scale.
Let me try to sneak one more question in. This is, I think, a pretty quick one. Could you explain the difference between the fleet capital cost effectiveness and the total cost effectiveness?
They can also refer to the frequently asked questions because I do go into detail there. For their purposes, really the one takeaway for the cost effectiveness is that the total cost effectiveness is based off of these costs that you enter at the very beginning. The capital cost effectiveness is based off of the installation cost and the unit cost of the, of an individual technology.
I want to mention really quickly, this is Julia Miller. We got a comment in from Alan Powell while Julie was talking about the different ways to download files. And Alan said that folks should probably download the CSV file if they're applying for grants so that they can include it in the work plan submittal so EPA can upload it into Driver. So I thought I'd mention that really quickly.
And yes, he is correct.
Okay. Well, a number of other questions have come in, but I'm going to put those on hold and launch our next polling question before we move to our next speaker. So the question is, what have been the biggest barriers for you in quantifying health impacts? And lists a number of responses. So I'll give you a second or two to read them. They're a little bit more lengthy than the last poll question. And if you would, please just click on the most appropriate response. We'll give you a few seconds, and then we'll tally up the results. Okay, we should see the results momentarily. There you go. I have them. So you can see here that the response the greatest response was access to health benefits estimation tools. So actually, access to these type of tools is one of their biggest challenges. And then understanding how to use health benefits estimating tools, which hopefully this will give you at least a big jump start on that. All right, let's go ahead then and introduce our next speaker, Denise Mulholland, who is the Senior Program Manager at EPA's State and Local Climate and Energy Program. She's been with EPA for nearly 20 years, and over that period, she has authored and managed the development of a number of guidance documents and software tools to help state and local governments, particularly in their efforts to analyze climate and clean energy policies and to maximize the benefits of those policies to the environment, health, and the economy. So she is going to walk you through the COBRA tool, which is, as Julia mentioned, this is going to be a little more sophisticated in that it has more applications that you can use it for, and then walk you through a specific example to show you how it works. Denise.
Thanks, Catherine, and thanks, everybody. I really appreciate having the chance to talk to you all today and share with you some information about the COBRA model, the Co-Benefits Risk Assessment Screening Model. So to start off, what is it? So COBRA is a user-friendly screening tool where you as the user enter criteria air pollutant emission reduction. So you enter your particulate matter, your SOx, your NOx, your VOCs, your ammonia, and COBRA will give you the first order or approximate estimate of the air quality impacts that are likely to occur from those changes in emissions, and then the subsequent health effects that are likely to occur from those emissions. Reductions, and then it calculates the economic value of those avoided health effects. So where we are now is that policymakers typically just consider the economic cost of policy choices, but that's just part of the story. And what COBRA does is it enables you to estimate the economic value of the health benefits and to provide more balance to your comparisons of the costs and benefits. So with COBRA, you can better understand and communicate the potential for health and economic benefits from clean energy policies or policies that reduce these emissions, and determine which options warrant further analysis with more sophisticated tools. So it is a screening tool similar to the DEC. So how does COBRA work? Well, COBRA is based on rigorous methods that EPA uses for our own benefits assessments, but we've adapted it for use as a screening tool to make it more available to other folks on the outside. And this is just a schematic that shows you how it works. Up at the top left, you have the user input. So this is what you need to bring to the model. And what you bring are the emissions changes, so reductions in PM, SOx, NOx, VOCs, et cetera. You enter those into the model for the year 2017, and you pick a discount rate. And we offer you two options. You'll see I'll walk you through an example and explain the differences. But that's basically what you bring are emissions changes and you pick a discount rate. And some other models, you'll hear from David in a bit, where the input starting point is a little bit different. It's air quality modeling, and this is just emissions data. So it is for the year 2017 in the model, and I just wanted to flag for folks today that we've just released a brand new version today that is current through the year 2017. So for folks that have downloaded it previously, we'll send around an update notice, but otherwise you can get it off our website, which is at the end of my presentation. So COBRA takes these emission changes, and it has a reduced form or a simple air quality model embedded in the tool, and so it converts these emission changes into changes in air quality. And then based on population numbers, as well as concentration response functions, which are epidemiological equations that EPA uses in our own regulatory analyses, it comes up with changes in health incidences that occur, changes in illnesses, deaths, that sort of thing. And what it does is it applies an economic value to those changes, again, using numbers that EPA uses in our own regulatory analyses when we're estimating benefits. And so then the outputs of the tool are changes in air quality, changes in health effects, and the economic value of those changes in health effects. So here's a list of the different health effects that are estimated in COBRA, and it also estimates the related economic value of these. So what we have mortality, incidences, so that's death. We have heart attacks, hospital admissions, respiratory illnesses, emergency room visits for asthma cases, restricted activity days, what that is. Those are code red days, if folks are familiar with days where the pollution levels are so high that activity is restricted and they tell sort of elderly or people that have compromised immune systems or have asthma to stay indoors. So those are the minor restricted activity days, as well as work loss days. So if you're sick, obviously, many times you'll end up missing work. So those incidences are estimated in COBRA and monetized in terms of the value. So what are the strengths of the model? So what COBRA does is it really beefs up the benefit side of the cost-benefit equation and helps to support balanced decision-making. So it's this tool that just enriches this discussion of benefits and helps us look at things on a more balanced playing field or level playing field. So that's one of its strengths. There aren't many tools out there that do that. It's really easy to use. It's, you know, you just bring a couple of inputs to the tool itself. It has canned equations and approaches within it that are consistent with what EPA does. And we have a user guide that walks you through step-by-step how to use the tool. It's very flexible in terms of how you can enter the data geographically. You can enter it at a county level, state level, regional level. You can do groups of counties, groups of states. You have a lot of flexibility there. And you can enter your reductions in either as a percentage, like a percentage reduction that you're achieving or looking for a particular emission, or a absolute reduction, so like a certain number of tons. It's free, which is a benefit over the more sophisticated air quality models, which can be expensive. What we talk about with COBRA is that COBRA is really useful to help you screen or narrow a long list of policy options down to a shorter list and sort of help you identify those options which might warrant further analysis with those more sophisticated and expensive air quality models. It's really quick, just takes a couple of minutes to generate results, and it presents your results in easy to visualize maps. So, you know, you can copy these maps, and I'll show you an example of those, but it helps you really visualize the impact by looking at it in a map as well as in some tables. So there are limitations, of course, with COBRA. It's a free screening tool, and it is screening. So it's not a highly sophisticated air quality model. It is not appropriate for SIP planning. Again, you can use it sort of to narrow your list of what you might what you might analyze with a more sophisticated tool. But this is really just a quick and dirty screening tool. For those of you who do want more sophistication, COBRA can be somewhat limiting. You're restricted to our own baseline emissions that are in there currently for the year 2017. Again, you know, the equations are canned, they're set, so you may want to can you explain really quickly what canned means? Oh, I'm sorry. Canned means we've hardwired them in there. So you don't actually pick the what equation you would use. You don't have a choice. It's just done for you. We pick the ones that EPA's Office of Air Quality Planning and Standards says is the best one to use. That they use. So that's what we do. And the same thing with economic values.
you cannot change the economic values that are in the model. You use what's there. And also, it does not address cap issues. So if you live in an area where there are controls or caps on the emissions, if you reduce emissions under this capped area in one place, unless you retire the allowance for that emission or for those emissions, they're just going to come up somewhere else. So COBRA does not address that, and these are just sort of things you should be aware of as you're using the tool. And I guess the final limitation is that, you know, it really relies upon inputs generated elsewhere that may be oversimplified. So while there are limitations, we've found in the last 10 years with the tool that our peer reviewers as well as our users have found it to be a valuable model, though, that really does help contribute to policy analysis as well as public dialogue on benefits. So how do you use COBRA? So here are the steps for running an analysis, and what I'll do is I'll walk you through an example to illustrate these right after this slide, but this is also detailed very well in our user manual as well as web presentations that are on our website, our COBRA website. So the first thing that you do, and you do this outside of COBRA, is you figure out what emission reductions will occur and where will they occur. So these are your inputs, and we do provide tips on our website in the user manual as to what types of tools and approaches you could use. We have eGRID listed here. There are some other tools. PPAC is a tool that we listed in the survey that is one that we're looking to finalize shortly that can help you. But you can use a variety of different tools and methods to come up with these emission reductions and their location, and then you bring them to COBRA. So with COBRA, you enter them into the model, you select the discount rate, and then you run the model and review the results. So here I'm just going to walk you through an example quickly in the interest of time where we will just sort of walk through a hypothetical case so you can see how it works. So what we're going to do here is evaluate the health benefits or the potential health benefits of a renewable portfolio standard, some sort of a renewable standard that a state or a locality might be interested in implementing. So what a renewable portfolio standard does, or a renewable standard, would be to require utilities to switch to a particular percentage of electricity generation from what they're doing now to renewable resources if it's not renewable already. So if what you're switching away from had been generated with fossil fuels, then this new renewable standard is going to achieve criteria air pollutant reductions, which is then going to result in health benefits. And so that's what we're going to look at here in COBRA in this example today. So we're just going to assume here, suppose a state, I picked Michigan arbitrarily, has established a renewable portfolio standard that says that 10% of their electricity generation must be from renewable resources by 2015 or 2017. You could do this for a county. So what you do first, just like I said in the slide with the list of steps, is figure out where your emissions are going to take place, where the reductions will be. This can either be, you know, like I said, national, county, state, or regional levels. If you know what plants are going to be affected, you could put them in that particular county, or you could use this very sophisticated model to try and figure out where these reductions will take place. So there's a variety of ways you can do this, but for this example, we're just going to assume that the emissions are going to occur statewide. And that is a simplification for the purposes of this example. So now what we can do is figure out, okay, well, we can either estimate the reductions in a percentage or we can estimate them in absolute tons. We can either say, well, let's just assume 10% is switched, so we're reducing 10% of our fossil fuel-related electricity emissions, or we can actually calculate the tons number using an emission factor approach, which is kind of a simplified approach, or a more sophisticated modeling approach if you have one. So what we did in this example was we just took an emission factor approach, and we used EPA's Emissions and Generation Resource Integrated Database, so eGRID, and we followed a number of steps here you can see on the slide. We figured out what the net electric generation in Michigan typically is, and so we figured out the output emission rates from eGRID, so what are the emission factors that eGRID tells us occur with that electric generation, and then we figured out, well, how much generation already comes from the state of Michigan, and so we pulled that out of eGRID. And we now are left with, 10% minus the 3.1% that we figured out, and now we're left with 6.9% of a reduction. So we want to reduce 6.9% of our current generation. So that turns out to be 6 million megawatt hours. And we're going to apply the emission factors that eGRID tells us about to figure out what the SOx and NOx reductions would be for from that reduction in megawatt hours. So what we're going to do now is we're going to take, so we have our estimates, we have our emissions reductions estimates, and there's a number of ways you could do that. That was just one illustration. But what we're going to do now is just enter them into the tool. This is a screenshot of what the COBRA model looks like when you first open it up. And so you would pick, you know, that you want to do something for an individual state, and you would select the state. You could also select multiple states. You could, we're just going to do one state, but if you wanted to do county, certain counties within a state, it'll take you to that next step, and you can select only a handful of counties within a certain state. But we're just going to do statewide for this example. We're going to, the next thing you have to do is figure out what emission categories your reductions will come from. So these emission categories are labels that come from EPA's National Emissions Inventory, and there's a bigger description of what this is and where it comes from in our user manual. But essentially, you're trying to pick, you know, which is the user category where these emissions are typically organized in our emissions inventory and in our baseline, and you're going to affect that. So since this is an electricity-related scenario, we're going to focus on fossil fuel combustion electric utilities. So we would click on that tab, and then it would highlight in yellow, and we would enter our emission reductions that we just calculated previously. So the next step after we hit, let's see if I can go back. You'd hit apply edit, and then it'll ask you to name it, but it'll then ask you to select a discount rate. And so what the discount rate does, the benefits, you know, people would rather have benefits today than have them in the future. So if these benefits are going to be in the future, you have to discount the value of that. So what we do is we follow EPA guidelines. We're consistent with how EPA chooses to discount their the future benefits. And we offer you the option of 3% or 7%. And there's, again, more description in the user manual and here even in the text box that tells you what the implications are. But essentially, if you're discounting it by 3%, you're discounting the future benefits less. So those benefits will be worth more than if you discounted it at a 7% rate. But again, there's much more information about that in the user manual. And what we recommend that you do is to do it in both ways. Do it once with 3% and then go back with 7% and do it again and then compare the results. You can get a bounded estimate. That's how EPA does it. So you run the model and you come up with some results. And this is what, these are the outputs of COBRA. This is not what it looks like when they come out, but this is just organized in a table. That for the emission reductions that we entered for this hypothetical case in Michigan, the results would be that from these emission results in the year 2017, you would avoid between 119 and 300 deaths. And this is, again, how EPA does this. It assumes different functions, so this is a range in terms of the estimates that you get. This number of deaths would be avoided over a 20-year period. So it's not all in 1 year for the deaths. But it is over a 20-year period from those reductions in the year 2017. The other impacts that are listed there, like asthma attacks, heart attacks, hospital admissions, asthma emergency room visits, those are all avoided incidences in that year. So in the year 2017, you'll avoid, 3,200 asthma attacks, 16 to 146 heart attacks, 68 asthma visits. So these are the outputs of COBRA. And then on the right-hand side, you can see the economic value associated with those incidences. And these are, again, documented in the user manual what the values are, but it's, we calculate the incidence times the economic value, and then you get your dollar value. So here is just my next to last slide that will just give you a visual of what the outputs actually look like in COBRA. And so, top right, these are your the tables of results, and you can sort them. Here it's health effect tables. You can pick and choose. Do you want it by the economic value? Do you want it by the certain incident? But you can see them all in a tabular form. You can export them, so you can manipulate them in your own, Excel file. And at the bottom left, you can see that it's a map of the different health effects, and it's color-coded. You can even change the color coding to show you the degrees of, where the biggest impacts are. And this has been a really nice tool that folks have been able to use to help them, copy these PowerPoint or these maps into PowerPoint presentations and really visually show people where these benefits are likely to occur. So that was just a snapshot or a quick walkthrough of the tool. You can get more information from our website. There you can get lots of information about how it works, why you'd use it, and specific examples. the one that I walked you through is a renewable example. There's an energy efficiency example that's on there as well. And then you can download the model, review the documentation, and you can always contact me. And there's my contact information, and I'm happy to answer any clarifying questions now or any other questions later. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Denise. There's some folks that have already downloaded your presentation before the webinar noticed that there were some changes in the slides that we did not get posted immediately before. So we will post that, your final presentation afterwards. And people keep asking. The website for that is epatechforum.org, and you just need to click on then the next page, which will take you to the 2012 materials. So this is has been ongoing for a number of years, so you can look back at all of the different topics we've covered at that page. In any event, we do have a couple of different questions that came in. One was regarding the discount rate that you mentioned as an input. Are there plans for giving users a broader range of discount rates? There's not agreement that 3% should be the lower bound.
That's a great question. For the COBRA model, no, again, because we have this hardwired into how EPA does it. But that would be a great question that I would ask David when he talks about BenMap, because you might have that option, and I don't know, but you might have that option in BenMap, because BenMap is certainly, you know, I refer to COBRA as, you know, this sort of mini BenMap, where it takes a lot of the BenMap flexibilities and hardwires them into an inflexible tool for folks that maybe don't know what the difference is in terms of discount rates or what the right economic value is.
Another question was regarding the population census data that's in there. What is the population base and their census year, and then what is the base year that you're using in general?
No, I don't. For the emissions, it's 2017, and I know we just ended up getting updated baseline data, and so I'd have to get back to you on that one. I know it's the latest, greatest possible data that we could get, but I don't know exactly what year that is. But that's the latest, greatest data. If you've downloaded COBRA up to this point, it's outdated data, whereas the population data that's in the new version for today is as current as we could possibly get it.
Great. There were a number of questions that came in for Julie and then similar ones for you, which is how the actual what methods are used to translate the emissions reductions into specific health benefits, the heart attacks, the reduced heart attacks and all that. Is there, can you talk a little bit more about that part of the program? And then, you know, in Julie's case, she was also talking about calculating the actual costs, and, well, yours as well, the cost savings associated with that.
So in COBRA, there is, sure, I'd be happy to answer that. And then I'd be happy to follow up if I can't get into enough detail given the time that we have here today. So COBRA starts out with emissions, but it has a built-in air quality model, a reduced form air quality model in it that is called a source receptor matrix. You can find out more about it in the user manual. But essentially, it's based on air quality modeling runs that have been done in the past, and we figured out the relationships between, you know, what's emitted in one place and what the air quality changes are in other places and how it all moves around. So we have a reduced form air quality model in the tool. It's not a sophisticated air quality model, which is why this isn't appropriate for SIP planning. But what we do is with this reduced form source receptor matrix, which is what EPA has done in the past for our own sort of quick and dirty analyses, is come up with air quality changes. And then we apply certain equations that are from the epidemiological community that are health functions. And so these are equations that, you know, relate to these specific air quality changes and health incidences. So it's mathematical equations, and then come up with the health incidences, and we apply specific economic values that are all detailed in the user manual. And so it's just, you know, health incidences avoided times certain economic value equals the economic value. Does that help?
Yes. Thank you. Okay. So we're running a little bit late, so I guess we'll do a poll, and then we'll move to David's presentation, and we'll get that set up on this end.
There's we're going to launch our poll question. As you can see, the next question is, for what purpose would you primarily like to use these health estimation tools? And you have four choices, so if you'd quickly make your appropriate choice. And we'll see the results. Okay, quantifying economic benefits of emissions reductions and make the case to others about the benefits of these programs are the two highest reasons for actually needing these tools. Thank you for responding. That's our last polling question, but just a reminder, you'll see some more when you leave the webinar. And let's now turn it over to our final speaker, David Risley, who works in the Clean Air Markets Division at EPA's Office of Atmospheric Programs. He uses the benefit assessment methods to evaluate the benefits of EPA's current and prospective emission reduction programs, and he's going to describe the benefits and mapping analysis tool, which, as we mentioned, is the most sophisticated tool. And again, we don't expect everybody to walk away being able to use these out of the box, but certainly this should whet your appetite. David?
Yes, thank you. I guess it is probably the most sophisticated, but I also would just say, you know, not to be scared by it. It comes with a lot of information that you would need preloaded, and actually isn't overly difficult to use. So I'm just going to walk through and talk about the Benefits Mapping and Analysis Program, which we all refer to as BenMap. And I'm going to talk a little bit about what BenMap is and how to use it, and then I'll provide some links for additional information. So what is BenMap? Essentially, it is a tool that we can use to estimate the health impacts and associated economic value of changes in air quality. And that's where this differs from some of the models, or the models that we've talked about to this point on this call. When I say changes in air quality, generally I'm referring to changes in criteria pollutants like PM2.5 and ozone, and those changes could stem from emission reduction policies or efforts that are aimed at those pollutants or as co-benefits from reductions of programs targeting greenhouse gas emissions, for example. I would point out that BenMap is really a flexible tool. There's a version of it that you can use that is very simple. All of the information that you need to run a simplified benefits assessment is existing in the tool. But there's also the ability to manipulate all of the information in BenMap. So you can use it in a simple form or make it as complex as you would like, basically. One function of BenMap is that it can estimate health impacts on any scale, so at the city level, a census block level even, or national policies. And similar to COBRA, BenMap's results can be mapped for ease of presentation. This is just a list of a couple of the policies that BenMap has been used to evaluate, and I think that, to me, one of the things that this demonstrates is its flexibility. So EPA has used BenMap to look at national-scale air quality programs, but it's also been used on local-level analyses, like the New York City Department of Health borough-level assessments, and the EPA has also partnered with international organizations to do evaluations in other countries. So really, you can use BenMap for almost anything. So the way that BenMap estimates benefits is by combining population exposure with air pollutants, baseline incidence rates for things like asthma, heart attacks, things like that, and concentration response functions. And by combining those three things, it estimates health benefits. So one of the keys in there, and Denise referenced this as well, is concentration response functions. And These are based on epidemiological studies that relate pollutant concentrations and incidences of health outcomes, and are basically, you can use that function to estimate the benefits of your air quality improvement programs. So BenMap, again, is really flexible and can be used to estimate the benefits based on almost any concentration response function, but these are the ones that EPA typically reports and uses. So similar to COBRA, we look at mortality, heart attacks, asthma attacks, et cetera. So BenMap relies on data from different sources to perform its calculations. Essentially what it does is it combines air quality and population data to come up with a population exposure. So if you're thinking about an emission reduction program, that would be a reduction in exposure to a pollutant that a certain population would experience. And then it combines that information with the concentration response functions and the baseline incidence and prevalence rates to estimate adverse health effects. And then it has functions embedded in it that allow you to put an economic value on those adverse health effects that are avoided. So one way to visualize this a little bit is to go through an example. So let's just say you're interested in pursuing a program that would improve air quality in a given region. So you would have, you see on the top left graphic there, you have your baseline air quality, and coupled with that is the policy air quality. And BenMap would take those two air quality grids and basically do a subtraction and calculate the improvement in ambient air quality. Next, BenMap would overlay that improvement in air quality with population data that's already in BenMap. You don't need to provide that. And it would combine that with the background incidence rates, which are, again, already in BenMap, and then the concentration response functions to give you a health benefit. So if you were to use BenMap, you would open the tool, and this would be, you know, the first thing you would see. And you can see on the left side here, it's sort of a split screen, and on the left side, there's a one-step analysis, which allows you to basically use all of the defaults that are already in BenMap. So all you're doing is specifying the air quality data that you're going to use, which I'll talk about in a minute, and then everything else would just flow from the defaults. And then on the right side is the different steps you would use to perform a custom analysis. And those steps, is basically just four steps. You're looking at your air quality data, and then you're providing inputs to estimate the health benefits. Then you're telling BenMap how you want to value and aggregate those benefits. And then you're generating reports. So it's just four pretty easy steps. So the first thing you would do, step one, and you would do this either in the one-step analysis or as step one of the custom analysis, is to specify your air quality data. So the goal here is to estimate the change in population exposure to the pollutant of interest. And BenMap even comes preloaded with a couple of things that you might find useful here. It has monitored data that's preloaded, and you could generate change in air quality from, you know, pollution in 1 year to pollution in another year and perform an assessment based off of that. Or if you have your own monitoring data, you can import that into BenMap. Or if you have modeled data, which EPA uses models like CAMEX and CMAC, which are pretty sophisticated air quality models. But if you have any modeling data, you could import that into BenMap to serve as your basis for your air quality data. So on slide 11, you can see how BenMap is used to basically combine the air quality data that you've specified with the built-in population data to estimate a population exposure. So essentially, it just overlays those two maps and tells you what your population exposure would be. So this slide covers steps 2 and 3 out of the 4-step process that VenMap uses. And it's pretty simple. Before I even get into it, I would just mention that on the VenMap website, you can download the standard data that EPA uses to perform these steps. And you really, if you didn't want to, you wouldn't even have to alter that at all. But essentially, step 2 consists of the first two bullets. You would select your health impact functions and choose an analysis year, and that would be used to estimate the incidences that you're avoiding, so the number of asthma attacks that your air quality improvement would result in. And then steps 3 and 4, basically you're telling VenMap how you would want to value those results using, you know, different methods that are already in already included in VenMap, and then how you want to aggregate your results. Well, it looks like my, oh, there they are. Oh, sorry. These are just some screenshots of what VenMap looks like when you're actually using it. It's certainly not as visually pleasing as the deck, but it is pretty easy to use. The window on the right there is basically just showing you what it looks like, where you would tell VenMap where your air quality files are and what population year you want to use. And then on the left is just a menu of the different health impact functions that are already included in VenMap, and you could select those, or again, you could download configuration files that are, you know, already set to go with EPA standard inputs. And then the final step of VenMap is just reporting the results. And I don't have as much detail here as I probably should, but again, similar to the deck, you can output data in tables. You can present data in maps. You can basically do, you know, anything you can imagine with the data. And then finally, I just leave you with some links to more information about VenMap. I almost wanted to lead with this because the VenMap website has a lot of good information on it. It has training materials. It has presentations. It has the user's manual, which is really comprehensive and answers a lot of questions. And then in addition to that, there's VenMap training that you can find, and there are two different providers of that training right now. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Great. You just answered one of our first ones, which is what are the training opportunities in using VenMap? So I wanted to let folks know that these links are not only in these presentations, which you'll find out up on the EPA Tech Forum site, but they're also on that page, so you don't have to go into the presentations to get them. They're posted right there on the page. So a couple of other questions, David, on VenMap is, can it be used to calculate PM2.5 emissions as well?
PM2.5 emissions? Or concentrations?
I'll leave that.
I can answer either way. VenMap is not an emissions tool, so you would have to use another tool for whatever you're trying to estimate emissions from. And as far as air quality, VenMap also is not an air quality tool. Remember that one of the differences between VenMap and models like COBRA and the DEC is that VenMap starts with air quality. That's that's really the key input that the user needs to provide. The only thing I would mention there is that, again, there is monitoring data that is already included in VenMap. It comes in the initial download, and if a user wanted to use some of that monitoring data then as their air quality input, then they could.
Well, that leads to another question. A couple of people have asked whether or not you can use this at a neighborhood scale or a specific road corridor scale? Could it be applied in those situations?
That's a really good question. So, you know, essentially it would depend on the richness of the data sets. So for things like, I would say, yes, you probably could, but you would need to provide shape files or something that FedMap could read to figure out how to or where those corridors are, because something like that, that's more of a complicated assessment that FedMap certainly has all of the tools and the functionality to do, but it requires a little bit more input from the user.
And maybe this is somewhat related. Can you also use it to estimate health impacts from different transportation scenarios? I'm not sure what scale they're considering here, but
yes, I mean that's absolutely what BenMap is for. Again, the only thing that BenMap needs as an input is a change in air quality. So if there's if they're able to provide that show the change in air quality for their project, then absolutely.
Can you talk a little bit about how, when, and under what circumstances you should be using COBRA instead of BenMap, and is one preferred based on the user type or the type of available data?
Well, Catherine, maybe David and I could both answer that one. This is Denise. So they both start at different points and essentially get you to the same place. But they start at different points. So the, as David was saying, the starting point, what you bring to the BenMap model is air quality changes in air quality. That's your starting point. And then it offers you a lot of flexibility. It offers you the option to take those air quality changes and just run them through a very simple approach, like COBRA, and get the results that you would, similar types of results. Or it enables you to make a lot of changes if you are more knowledgeable about specific functions that you care about or economic values that you feel strongly about. You can change those there, but if you do not have air quality modeling changes, if you do not have air quality changes, you can use COBRA if your starting point is emission changes. And what it will do is do the air quality modeling for you and then apply the same equations that are in BenMap, or should be, we try and keep it up to date as close as possible, the same equations in BenMap to get you your result. So really, if you come to the table with air quality modeling, or you come to the table with, the desire to be able to change the functions and the assumptions within the model, like the discount rate or something, I'm not sure if that's an option to modify in BenMap, then you would use BenMap. If you start with emissions, it would be COBRA. And COBRA is it's a more simple tool. It's much more basic in that way.
Yeah, I would only add to that, and it's implicit in Denise's answer, but BenMap would let you leverage more complicated air quality tools. So if you're running an air quality modeling tool that's maybe a little bit more sophisticated than the short or the reduced form source receptor matrix that's embedded in COBRA, then BenMap would allow you to take advantage of that and run your air quality through BenMap, and again, as simple or as complex a way as you'd like, and see the benefits.
Thank you. I think this is a question that may also apply to more than to all of our speakers, but. It came up while you were talking, David, about how the economic values for health benefits are determined. I think Denise touched on this a little bit when she was talking about it. Can you add anything here?
I would mention that that information, so when EPA performs a rulemaking, we go through an exhaustive process and include a lot of information in our regulatory impact analyses. And all of that information is in there at much greater detail than I'd be able to tell you. But, I mean, essentially EPA relies on the best economic information that's available. And in some cases, depending on the health outcome, In some cases, we will use, actual estimates of hospital costs to multiply, an incidence of a hospital admission avoided by the average hospital cost for that outcome and sum those. In other cases, like for premature mortality, it's a little bit more complicated. And essentially, what we do is I'm not sure if it's even EPA or we review the peer-reviewed literature on this. But what people do is they talk about what their willingness to pay would be for a reduction in risk and then aggregate that risk up. So there are different methods that are used depending on the health outcome that we're talking about, and there's more detail that's available in EPA's regulatory impact analyses.
Great. Well, let's go ahead and open it up for all our speakers, because the next set of questions really are targeted at all the tools. One question that came in was how, if at all, these tools could be used with greenhouse gas emissions. I don't know who wants to take the first shot at that, Denise?
Sure, I can take a crack at that. Greenhouse gas emissions, CO2, carbon dioxide is not in COBRA, and it is we include criteria air pollutants because they are directly linked to health effects through our concentration response function.
For the DEC, we have CO2 emissions in both baseline as well as emission reductions for the on-highway anti-idling and other technologies that fuel economy benefits. That's really the only place in the DEC where you'll find it, is if you're doing a run with technologies that give you fuel economy benefits.
For BenMap, it's certainly flexible enough to allow a user to, if you have air quality, again, whether it's CO2 or what have you, and you have a concentration response function that you're interested in, you could use it. But currently, EPA does not use BenMap to estimate any health impacts of CO2, and we use it for, as Denise said with COBRA, we use it for the co-pollutants, the criteria pollutants.
Great. This question is more directed at Denise. Are you aware of policies or programs that have been informed by COBRA results, or is it just for internal screening assessments?
That's a great question. Actually, Catherine, folks have used it for both purposes. So we have seen, for example, there was just a study that Duke put out recently on looking at the health advantages of their clean smokestack law that they had passed a number of years ago in there. So they used COBRA to figure out what the health benefits are of that. There are a number of studies that Department of Energy is another one that has also looked at what are some of the health impacts of different renewable technology programs that they've been investing in. And there are certainly a number of states out there that have done both screening level and analyses with COBRA. And we link to several on our website, and we have some within the presentations that are on our website, and we plan to expand the list that's up there so that you can see how it's been used by others. But certainly it's been used for both purposes.
Moving back to David, can BenMap be integrated with GIS programs such as ArcGIS? I'm not sure, don't know if you're familiar with that, but... generically.
Yes, it definitely can. One way that EPA uses that is you can export all of the BenMap results, the BenMap data, anything you would want to export, and you could do that in a format that's pretty easily importable into ArcGIS.
Thanks. Another question was regarding whether there are plans. Well, let me stick with BenMap. For BenMap, have you actually gone back and compared actual health impacts based on some assessment that you did in the past to determine how close your model is to predicting the real results?
As far as I know, EPA has not done that, but I'm certainly not the only one at EPA that performs these types of assessments, so I probably couldn't speak for the whole agency on that.
Okay. Are there plans to integrate steps to calculate atmospheric dispersion models in BenMap? Is there a plan to integrate technology and fuel use-related changes so as to calculate emissions changes like DEQ into COBRA? So those are two separate questions, one for you, David, and one for you, Denise.
As far as I know right now, we're certainly looking at updating BenMap. But as far as I know right now, one of the things that we sort of like about BenMap is its ability to take in air quality modeling from anywhere. So as far as I know, we're not looking at pairing it up specifically to a atmospheric dispersion model or any air quality model.
And Denise, the question for you was, is there a plan to integrate technology and fuel use related changes so that you can calculate the emissions changes like DEQ into COBRA?
Within COBRA, you can pick from your emission categories that come from the National Emission Inventory that EPA has. And so certainly you can pick specific types of vehicles. For example, you could select highway vehicles. You could select off-highway transportation types, and there's different degrees of specificity that you can get into with COBRA. I just gave fossil fuel combustion electric utility, but there certainly are options where you can look at, fuel use. You can adapt it to your analysis and figure out, what are the emission changes. I guess it's what is coming in with the emission reduction is what you really need. You come in with the emission reductions associated with a technology or a fuel use change, and we just map it into the appropriate place. So if you have the emission reductions from a specific technology or a fuel change, then you can put it into COBRA. You just have to map it into the right spot that you bring that information to it.
Okay, thank you very much, and thanks to all the speakers. We're out of time for questions, and I do apologize. We had to leave some of them unanswered, but you do have access to the contact information for our speakers and these presentations up on the website that I mentioned, EPA Tech Forum, and we definitely encourage you to go to the links that are provided there to test out some of these tools, and then you might actually have some more questions. So with that, we're going to go ahead and close the webinar, and again, you will see some exit poll questions. There's about five or six of them, and it shouldn't take you very long to answer them, but the results will be very helpful to us. So please take a second after you close out and look for additional information about our next webinar, which should be in the next month or two, and we'll get that to you by email for all of those of you who attended and those of you that have been on the listserv. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Catherine. Thanks, everyone.